You're listening to The Pulse. I'm Mike and Scott. Even though medical marijuana is available in nearly half of U.S. states, it remains on the federal level a Schedule I drug under the Controlled Substances Act. It's on the same list as heroin, LSD, and ecstasy. Advocates and lawmakers have pushed to get marijuana off that list since the 70s without success. The Obama administration just denied another such bid. This time it was led by two Democratic governors. So for now, the drug continues to be classified as having high potential for abuse, but no accepted medical uses. So that means researchers who want to study marijuana have to untangle a mess of red tape before they can get to work. Reporter Liz Reed takes us inside one of the few labs in the country where people are getting high with the federal government's blessing.
Inside a ventilated chamber made of plexiglass and steel sits a young man who's about to do something that in most circumstances would be against federal law.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm Liz.
I'm 15.
He introduces himself with his study ID number, 15, rather than his name, because he doesn't want the world to know he's smoking weed in the name of science. It's 8:45 in the morning, and number 15 looks like he just rolled out of bed. He's wearing a t-shirt and gym shorts, and his thick brown hair sticks out wildly in every direction. He sits down in an office chair, picks up the small metal pipe, and gets to work. The pipe is covered with a metal cap, so neither number 15 nor research assistant Muhammad Warak knows whether it's a placebo or active marijuana inside. Warak asks number 15 to tap the sides of the pipe with the lighter to make sure all the weed falls to the middle of the bowl. Each participant in this study has 10 minutes to ingest 10 milligrams of Delta-9 tetrahydrocannabinol, more commonly known as THC, the psychoactive compound in marijuana. Number 15 isn't wasting any time. Every exhale is followed almost immediately by another hit on the pipe. He finishes in 7 minutes. He's part of a study funded by the Federal Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, or SAMHSA. Associate Professor of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences Ryan Vandry is running the study at the Behavioral Pharmacology Research Unit at Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore.
So there's been a couple studies comparing drug effects and blood pharmacokinetics for smoking and vaporization, but no study has done all three, blood, urine, and saliva. And there's also been very little evaluation of different doses on drug effects and cognitive performance.
The three-story brick building where this research takes place wouldn't look out of place on any college campus. The inside is equally unremarkable. There are narrow, winding hallways with offices and small rooms, a staff kitchen. Scientists here study all kinds of drugs, from caffeine and nicotine to heroin and LSD, so security is tight. After number 15 is done smoking, Warak takes the pipe he used to the pharmacy to make sure all the marijuana is gone.
So every door has a key card entry.
There are security guards at the building 24/7 and cameras all over the place. You have to have a badge just to get inside, and some doors, like the pharmacy, won't open for just anybody.
Hello?
Hey, it's Muhammad.
I'm not allowed in the pharmacy, so I have to wait outside. A few people pass by me in the narrow hallway, giving me quizzical looks. It's not the kind of place you typically see reporters.
So what did they say?
They were good. We're good.
As we round the corner on our way back toward the smoking room, we see number 15 sitting on the ground with his head between his legs. Another research assistant stands next to him with a clipboard, looking worried.
You good? Very lightheaded. Very lightheaded? Okay.
In case you didn't hear that, number 15 says he's very lightheaded, which he'll have to note on the questionnaire he'll fill out about a dozen times over the course of the next 8 hours. He'll also have blood drawn, saliva sampled, urine collected, and vitals measured, and will complete cognitive tasks on the computer. All this happens in what's called the session room, which looks like the central hangout area in a college dormitory. There are TVs and couches, a kitchen, and even a pool table. He'll go through the whole procedure 6 different times on 6 different days, 3 times smoking, 3 times vaporizing with placebo, high dose, and low dose weed. Later on, after securing the right permissions, Vandry takes me inside the pharmacy and introduces me to pharmacist Olivia Hahn.
So Olivia, does all the pharmacy work for us, handles storage, accountability, and preparation dispensing of the drugs.
The drugs are stored in a large vault that takes up almost one whole wall of the small pharmacy. Only Han and a handful of other Johns Hopkins pharmacists are allowed inside. Even Vandry's never been in there. Han hesitates when I ask if I can take a look.
I can show you like briefly. So those are steel container cabinets that they're in?
Yeah. So this is like still like vaulted door. It's really heavy. It has to be over a certain amount of weight.
The vault is mostly empty except for a couple of refrigerated steel cabinets in the corner. Inside one of those cabinets is the 20 grams of marijuana Vandry needs for his study, an amount that would fit inside a sandwich bag. The Drug Enforcement Administration requires that even small amounts of Schedule I drugs be stored in safes that weigh more than 750 pounds or are bolted or cemented to the floor. This vault exceeds those requirements, but Han says the DEA still comes to inspect the vault every time a new study starts, just to be sure. And storing the drugs is at the tail end of a long process of paperwork and permissions. For his study, Vandry had to go through a university ethics review and get approval from the Food and Drug Administration and the DEA. And there's a whole other mess of red tape to deal with to actually get the marijuana.
I contact the folks who are in charge of the NIDA drug supply. I let them know what I need. Then I have to submit a packet of information to them. It includes a DEA ordering form. It includes a copy of the protocol, the IRB approvals, the IND from the FDA, and a copy of my CV. And then, so all of that goes in a package to them. They review it and they'll contact the federal agency approving the study.
Vandry says it took about 9 months to get the study off the ground. Given all the permissions, bureaucracy, and strict storage and security requirements, I imagine the drugs being delivered in some sort of armored vehicle.
Who delivers it? Like, it's not like UPS, right? It is?
FedEx.
Wow. Uh-huh. I would not have expected that.
That's right. After 9 months of legwork and half a dozen permissions, this Schedule I drug is delivered in a regular old FedEx truck. It's just one of many contradictions inherent in marijuana research. Nearly half of U.S. states have legalized the drug specifically for medical uses. Yet, according to the FDA, there are no medical uses for cannabis. Here's Vandry again.
And the DEA has no motivation to unschedule cannabis. And they're sticking with their no established medical benefit, I think, because the FDA hasn't approved it. And nobody's funding the trials to do that FDA would need to see to approve it. And so it's a quagmire. It's highly driven by politics, I think. It's driven more by emotion than it is by science.
While the DEA has once again rejected a request to reschedule marijuana, it is making one key change that could impact the pace of research. Currently, all the marijuana that Vandry and other scientists use in their research comes from just one farm at the University of Mississippi. The agency says it will soon begin licensing other farms to grow marijuana for academic and medical research, though it hasn't said when or how many. Meanwhile, the march of states legalizing marijuana for medical purposes continues at a pace far faster than scientists can prove that it actually works as a medicine. For The Pulse, I'm Liz Reed.
Liz is a reporter at our partner station, WESA, in Pittsburgh. Did you like this story? Subscribe to our podcast. It's on iTunes.